Fantasy freaks and geeks, what's up? We welcome you in to the NFL Fantasy Live podcast. James Coe here with you, joined alongside by the WizKids from Wisconsin, Alex Gellhart. What's cracking, man?
Excited to be here. Harmon just gave us a mini drum roll as you were starting that out, so I guess we're hyped today on this one.
It's Combine! Let's go!
Wide receiver prognosticator, the creator of Reception Perception, West Virginia's finest, we have Matt Harmon here as well. What's up?
Well, it is a fun time in the NFL calendar. Like, we've got free agency
looming.
Rolling.
Like, 2 weeks,
yeah,
right?
Pretty much. 2 weeks, we've got the
franchise tags.
We've got
happening.
Franchise tags happening. We have the combine, obviously. We have, like, coaches and GMs kind of starting to give some of those little seasoning of hints across the timeline and everything like that.
Sure, so, absolutely.
It's fun. It's fun times. So
headlines that will end up being non-stories.
Yeah, they're giving us just a little bit for the football addicts to like freak out
just
over, and then in 2 months, none of it's.
Well, it's
matter.
Funny. Like I was just reading RotoWorld or whatever, and the first thing that pops up is. Pat Shurmur says that Eli has multiple quality years left, which is like, okay, that's not true.
Okay.
But then he said earlier in the same statement that he was like, I have no use for running backs that don't catch passes. And I was like, that's a really insightful thing.
You know,
it's all about parsing out like what means something and what doesn't.
Usually a lot of smoke screens this time of year.
Usually when they're talking about players, don't buy it. But when they're talking about overall philosophy, that's interesting.
You know, it's interesting. I mean, when you said Eli's got a couple more years left or a few more years left, my mind – immediately threw out Eli Manning, and I was like, is he talking about Eli Apple?
No, he was talking about
where we are with Eli
that's
Manning
what I'm saying. That's what I'm saying, because I immediately threw out Manning.
I also think Eli Manning has plenty of good years left in his life on an NFL football roster.
He's a quality starter. That's a lot.
Quality starter and dad?
Yeah, maybe. I don't know. MG, my guy, Marcus Grant. What's up, man?
So I'm trying to workshop a new analogy for this time of year because everybody talks about this as being like a job interview and all these guys are like going for
right,
a
right.
job. Right? And I get that. And like, it's not wrong. It's just a tired analogy. So
just
I'm like,
old.
I'm sort of working on this. Like, it's like matriculating toward graduation or something like that. And so like, I'm kind of workshopping this. So like, the combine is like, sort of like the prom, because like you're trying to look your best. You put on your best moves in front of everybody.
That's true.
You know, you get they're gonna crown basically a king of the combine, which really won't mean anything other than pride.
Right, and you'll eventually get down to your underwear.
Right, you get down and.
Well,
I was gonna go with the, and then some people like Deion Sanders show up in a limo, but you have trumped me here.
This it kind of makes sense too, because
like
all the pro days and stuff are like senior week, like
right.
you're going on camping trips, you're doing your activities, you're not really going to class, and then the draft comes, boom, it's graduation.
Graduation day.
Graduation.
I like it, Marcus.
I like it.
Good.
This
it's
is the prom, in that analogy. We've got a new producer in the building as well.
Yes,
we've got producer Christina.
Hi, Christina.
Hey.
How you doing?
Up?
How are you guys?
Doing well. What's going on? How you doing?
I'm great.
You want to tell us a little bit about yourself? The listeners out there eagerly anticipating what's going
on? Well, for all the listeners, this is my first time solo producing.
Yeah.
So thanks for having me.
Yeah.
This is actually my first season producing with the NFL, so that's awesome too.
We got a
welcome.
Rookie.
Welcome.
Yep, so brand new for everything.
Let's go.
You'll soon find that this is a pretty low-class operation.
Yes.
Podcast.
Very easy to produce.
Yeah.
Well, obviously, because there's no buttons to press, because we have to manually do our own.
We got nothing going on.
We could go find like BS music and stuff to play for it, but.
But feel free to jump in with your own hot takes.
You know,
whatever.
Absolutely,
that's all
right,
that matters.
Exactly.
Yeah, you don't have too much like producing duties, but feel free to jump in with any thoughts on prospects.
Sure.
Or life.
Or just
or
life.
General. Life
make,
in general.
Make
especially.
Fun of Harmon.
Make
what
fun of me. That's,
Erica's
that's
always a, good at that.
That's easy.
True.
That's
right,
easy
right,
job
that's
of being.
Well, even when Alex was the producer, he would make fun of Harmon.
That's true.
Well.
Yes.
So it's just a long,
I mean,
time-honored tradition. Right.
It's not a producer-exclusive activity. It's just kind of anybody that comes
I'm
in contact
saying.
With me.
Should we get into the show?
Yes. Probably. We do have a great show lined up in front of us here today. Got a great interview. We got James Laurinaitis from the Big Ten Network, former Rams linebacker. Played for the Saints as well, but obviously a Rams lifer there. He's going to be joining the program today. He's going to be giving his takes on some of the top prospects out of the Big Ten. And we'll also get his take on the Marcus Peters trade to his former team, the LA Rams. We're going to talk a little bit about the Combine as well. We'll close out your show with Daily Depth, but we start your show as we always do with your top fantasy headlines.
Breaking news.
Headlines.
Jacksonville re-upped Blake Bortles to the tune of 3 years, $54 million, $26 million guaranteed. Bortles was already slated to make $19 million on his fifth-year rookie deal, but this deal replaces that, so he essentially got a two-year extension. Blake gave the most Blake quote regarding the deal, quote, "I don't have a whole lot of knowledge how any of this stuff works. Now let's go to work and continue to build on what we did last year and go play." Let me say, I don't have a whole lot of knowledge how any of this stuff works. That is the most Blake quote ever.
You know what? He's like Kush from Jerry Maguire.
Oh, yes, he is. 100%.
I just want to play football.
I'll skate your surf, wherever the segment. I'm kind of enjoying Blake Bortles' like face turn, to use the wrestling 100%. Term, because he was kind of the heel.
Yeah.
Everybody loved him being the butt of the jokes, but now like he was okay last year. He's got a Twitter account propping him up, at Blake Bortles Facts, which is great if you don't follow it. Now stuff like this, I mean, like, he's just riding it out. He's gonna play. He's gonna do the best he can. If he lands another deal, great. If they replace him, whatever. He's just kind of going through it. And this was a smart deal because it moved money around.
Yeah.
Makes him a little more flexible with the cap this year to go after a Super Bowl again.
It's also a short-term deal.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It makes sense. It's kind of like a prove it deal, basically.
It is a prove it deal, and you don't see teams like if they view you as a franchise quarterback, they don't sign you to a 3 year deal. You know, they lock you up longer than that. $26 million guaranteed is peanuts on the quarterback market
that's what
these
I'm saying.
Days. Alex,
I mean, they were gonna give him $19 million next year anyways.
Yeah. The funny thing, like when I tweeted out, like, yeah, this is not that big of a deal, like it's actually pretty good for the Jags or whatever.
It's really good for the Jags.
Somebody replied, like, well, why would Blake take the question? Why wouldn't he bet on himself or whatever? I'm like, I mean,
that's what he's doing here though too.
He's also kind of the smarter thing for him to do would be like, no, I'm gonna do the Flacco and like I'm gonna ball out this year, go get big money
right
going into 2019. I think he knows I'm not gonna ball out this year. Like, he's taking the money now while he can get it.
He's getting Allen Robinson back. What the hell?
I also do think there's a comfort level there. I mean, like, for him, like, this guy who went to Central Florida.
That's true.
And now he's in Jacks. He's in low key Jacksonville. Like, they're playing well, so that's a plus. But he's low key. He doesn't have the same scrutiny where if he went to New York or Chicago or Dallas, you know, whatever. Just
I think Bortles just has some self awareness. He's aware of where he stands. Like, he's not.
Could you imagine?
To think like
can you imagine saying that statement a year ago from today? Blake Bortles has self-awareness.
I mean, I
would not have thought that.
Not to mention that if he leaves Jacksonville, all those jokes on the Good Place go away.
Yeah, I gotta keep that for the lols.
And also, I don't think that this rules out Jacksonville bringing in competition for him. Probably not in terms of a high-priced free agent like definitely not Kirk Cousins.
No Theodore Bridgewater?
Probably not. But I think that they can easily draft somebody, even in the first round, at a cost-controlled status and say, you know, hey, this is Blake's job right now.
Yeah.
But you can easily take it, you know, either into 2018 if he's not playing well, or especially into 2019.
Right.
Because they can move on from this contract.
And after that, after 2019.
Yeah, then it's your job. So
exactly.
I think – and this is a team that doesn't – like, if you look at it, doesn't have a ton of glaring needs or whatever. So, if a Lamar Jackson or something falls to them at the end of the first round, why not? Why not take him, let him sit for a while behind Bortles, who they have some level of comfort with?
Sure.
It's a great deal for Jacksonville.
Yeah, I think it's an amazing deal for Jacksonville. And, again, I too am surprised that Blake Bortles and his representation would have taken a deal like that. It's a little bit curious, but hey,
I don't know.
Whatever.
He pocketed $7 million more, and he's not in that different of a spot than he was if he went and like played out the rest of his rookie contract. Because he gets $7 million more guaranteed if it's a 1 year deal and they move on from him.
Yeah.
And he plays pretty well. He can still go hit the free agent market and make decent money.
I guess it's more of a question of like he's got to play well now for 2 years. You know what I'm saying? Versus just playing well for a year. And I think he's really set up to actually have a good real life quarterbacking season next season. But you know the NFL's crazy.
He's still Blake though. Like he still could. He could screw this thing up so fast.
Right. No,
like,
you're right.
I mean, he had like the playoff. Just look at the playoff games. The three games there in the postseason against Buffalo, he was objectively terrible as a passer. I mean, like hard to watch. Terrible.
I mean,
Patriots. He was good.
Patriots. He was. The Steelers. He was awesome.
Yeah.
And then in the
Steelers, he was unstoppable.
Yeah, the Steelers, he was incredible. And then against the Patriots, he was good enough in the first half to keep him afloat.
Yeah.
And then they even at the end of that game, they showed they do not trust Blake Bortles to go out and like win them the game.
Man,
they
was inches away from hitting a game-winning touchdown on that pass Stephon Gilmore broke up, though. Right. And like that was a pretty good throw on the run from
Blake.
I thought it was, too.
I thought he made some pretty nice plays.
Also, let's not forget, that Buffalo game, there were reports that the winds were god-awful because no quarterback played well in that game. Tyrod didn't play well, Blake didn't play well, and then Nathan Peterman came in. And
I mean, you're not giving me a lot of names to say, like, well, there were good quarterbacks there to play well. That's the three guys
Tyrod's good.
He's an average quarterback. Okay.
But still, all those two average quarterbacks and Nathan Peterman all played well below average in that game. So the conditions might have had a little something to do with it as well.
We go to running back Matt Forte. Retired. I'm kind of sad about this one, but a good note from Field Yates. Quote, Matt Forte entered the NFL in 2008. He's led the league in total yards from scrimmage since that time with 14,468 total yards. That's impressive, man. That is impressive. Given the bad teams that he has played for, the bad coaches he has played for, limited offenses, I mean, for him to be able to rack that up, that's man, that is super impressive, and he's been a class act in the NFL as well. Yeah. I'm sad to see him go.
Yeah, it's too bad he never really got to play with the team that.
That's what I'm saying.
A Super Bowl or anything.
It just seems not fair to somebody like Matt Forte, who was, who I think surprised coming out of college. I mean, obviously he surprised. I don't think anybody thought he was going to have the most scrimmage yards since when he entered the league. You know what I mean? So, but he just didn't get to play for a team that. I mean, he did make that one Super Bowl run, didn't he?
They went to – he wasn't there the year they went to the Super Bowl. He was in the NFC Championship game when they lost to the Packers.
Yes.
That's too bad.
Caleb Haney appearance.
The Caleb Haney appearance.
Oh!
Pick six to B.J. Raji. Matt Forte was always one of those guys that was never, like, ever regarded as the best running back in the NFL during his time, but it's always, like, top five, top ten, like, just perennially underrated. People talk about best running backs. Like,
super underrated.
What about Matt Forte?
He's also that guy, I mean, this being a fantasy podcast, that was never – I mean, he was – I felt like he was always kind of a top five running back, that guy that he kind of fell to you, but you were never upset with that.
Oh, yeah. It's like, oh, I got Matt Forte. Oh,
that's cool.
Yeah.
Plus, he was like, he was making big, he was putting up big receiver numbers before that was a thing.
Too, right.
Yeah. I think he had the 100 catches or whatever.
Well, I mean, he had that after LaDainian Tomlinson also had 100.
Right.
But I'm talking about like not like today's era of the NFL where running backs are doing even crazier things as receivers. Like, he was doing that pretty consistently.
And in his first 7 years, he had over 50 receptions and over 400 receiving yards in six of those 7 years.
And the one
he missed, he had 44 and 340. So you're still like, that's still pretty good.
Yeah. That is insane, man. And again, just, you know, all signs say that he's a good guy.
Yeah.
And a class act as well. You never heard him complain. Despite all the bad teams that he was on, but I don't know, man. I just felt like he deserved better, and I wish I could have seen him on a good team, maybe a dominant team even. But alas, he did retire.
By the way, you talk about that one, the 44 and 340 year for Matt Forte. Mm-hmm. LeGarrette Blunt's career receiving numbers?
Yes.
54 for 387.
Yes!
And they've been around about the same – were they the same draft class?
Blunt
might have been even year.
Yeah, Blunt was a little later.
But still.
Bill Barnwell, he's still for the Ringer these days?
No, ESPN,
right. I totally blacked out for a second. Made a point, though, that with Forte retiring and Jonathan Stewart getting cut, it's kind of like a sad day for the 2008 running back class, which no halfback class in the seven-round draft era has delivered more Pro Bowlers, six or Pro Bowl appearances, 14 than that
really?
One. Because that draft class included, well, Darren McFadden at the top, but Jay Stew, CJ2K, Matt Forte, Ray Rice, Jamal Charles, and Justin Forsett, along with, like,
wow,
the depth is pretty good. Steve Slayton, Tim Hightower.
I haven't heard the name Steve Slayton.
Man, how dare you skip over first-round picks like Rashard Mendenhall and Felix Jones?
Rashard Mendenhall was actually off to a pretty good start to his career.
He was.
And then he just kind of decided to hang up. He was in the Super Bowl against the Packers that same year Forte made it to the championship game.
Didn't he also have he had, like, some weird 9/11 stuff or whatever, I remember.
Yeah, I think he had some mental issues that he wanted to, like,
Felix,
heal up after.
Felix Jones, though, that was one of the weirder picks of all time because it was like
he was a backup at Arkansas.
He was a backup at Arkansas. I'm pretty sure I think they only took him because Jerry Jones like, I can't get my hands on on Darren McFadden, the real Arkansas back, so I'm going to take his backup. And he ended up being like the third best player out of that backfield because Peyton Hillis was in the same backfield.
He was?
Yeah, he was the fullback there at Arkansas.
At Arkansas,
Oh, I thought you meant in Dallas.
Oh, not.
Oh, no.
I was Peyton Hill's playing in Dallas?
No.
Oh, okay. I got you. No, I mean, Felix Jones was a good athlete, and I think that's why Jerry Jones kind of fell in love. And obviously the Arkansas thing, too,
yeah,
as well.
So was the Arkansas.
All right, there you go. We'll stay in this division. Vikings reportedly interested in Kirk Cousins. They are not expected to tag Case Keenum, despite his wonderful run. Our very own Gil Brandt said on Twitter, quote, "If I were a betting man, I'd say that's where he's talking about Kirk Cousins, lands."
Don't do it, Vikings. Rap Sheet also said, don't you go get that quarterback with that defense. Don't you do it. Nope.
Rap Sheet, Mike Garafolo also seemed to lend credit to this is a real thing. And you know what? Sorry, Alex, but it this needs to happen. It absolutely needs to happen because
it's a great fit.
It's a great fit. They have two awesome wide receivers that they absolutely need to maximize. They
Wrong.
Have a good and young running back in the backfield.
Bad idea.
No one cares about your privilege.
those receivers, I think, also fit with what Kirk Cousins does well, too.
Absolutely.
It'd be an amazing fit. That's why I hate it so much, because I don't want my Packers to have to go up against a Kirk Cousins-led attack with Thielen, Rudolph, Diggs, and Dalvin Cook in the backfield with that defense. Get out of here.
Yeah, it would really would make them an instant Super Bowl favorite in the NFC.
Some horse mess.
Which they were one game away from last year anyway.
Settle down, Phil Rivers.
They look good, man. Yeah, I hope he does end up there. Hey, by the way, you mentioned it right there, but the Panthers did cut Jonathan Stewart. I imagine he'll land with some team at some point as some kind of roster insurance or whatever it might be, but I don't know. I don't think he's going to make much of an impact. He looked downright terrible in Carolina last year.
I wrote in my piece reviewing the backfield situation for all 32 teams in the NFL. I said the Panthers are really in like a weird spot right now because they just drafted a player designated as a running back in the top 10 last year, but they clearly have a need at the position.
They can wait. It's a deep class.
I guess, yeah. They don't need to go spend another first-round pick.
Yeah.
But, I could see them spending a second or third-round pick on a guy to complement McCaffrey on the early downs.
I think they can even wait even longer. And if they can get Kalen Ballage out of Arizona State, I think it's a great fit for what the Panthers want to get done. Big body back. Pretty good athlete as well.
Who's that kid out of Tim Williams, I think, out of Tennessee? I think he's a little bit bigger.
John Kelly was the one I was thinking about.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Sorry, I'm mixing up.
These are all, I guess, kind of sort of de facto comparisons because you're thinking Christian McCaffrey is going to be that dynamic kind of playmaker guy, and they need a big body back to kind of complement him. Who knows what they end up
with?
But I think they can wait.
They were just such a terrible rushing offense last year that it's just, again, it seems weird that it's like, yeah, you just spent a top 10 pick again on a quote unquote running back.
Yeah.
Because he does much, much more than just run the football.
Oh, sure.
But you just spent a top 10 pick on this and you weren't a good running team last year, and now it seems like you do have a real need at the position. It's just a strange time, and I don't know.
I think it's hard to be a quote unquote good running team when your best running back is your quarterback.
It's quarterback, yeah.
You know, I mean, when he's the guy who's leading your team in rushing, that's going to limit your ability to run the football.
I don't know what they do, but I think that they need to work on the offensive line as well, too.
I was going to say, that could be a big issue.
I think
that could be a big issue.
I think that's a big issue.
And they were missing Ryan Khalil for a lot of last year, too.
Yeah, but Khalil, he's a tough guy to count on right now. He's already said that this is going to be his last year.
Exactly. He's been dealing with neck injuries?
Neck injuries kept him out last year.
Well, two-fifths of their offensive line was in and out of the lineup all the time. So, I mean, it just – I don't know, man. If they can – they need to shore up their offensive line. That's why I think they're going to wait a hell of a lot longer to draft running back. But I do agree with you. They need to address that that position in Carolina. All right, so Miami tagging Jarvis Landry was indeed a wink-wink move to try and trade Jarvis Landry. Remember, you're not supposed to intentionally sign or franchise tag a guy with the intent to trade, but we've seen it done a bunch of different times in the NFL. This is the latest example. Rumors circulating that the Tennessee Titans could be in line to trade for Landry. Good fit with Marcus Mariota, Alex Gilhar?
I don't know how I feel about that. Doesn't really, excite me.
Doesn't move the needle.
He's a good receiver, and he'll certainly help, but, I don't know. I want to see Marcus Mariota more of a spread offense. Maybe they can do that with Rishard Matthews and Corey Davis, if he's healthy this year, and Landry in the middle, but I don't know. It doesn't really move the needle for me a ton. And also, I feel like it complicates and depresses any fantasy value for Corey Davis or Rishard Matthews, then, if you've got a 130 target guy in the middle of the field there.
I would hope he doesn't see that many targets.
That's the thing. I feel like if he goes there, he's not going to get that many targets.
Yeah.
I mean, 130 is well off of the 160 he saw in two of his 3 years with Miami, or two of his 4 years.
Yeah. But who did Miami have, though?
No, they did. They didn't have anybody. I don't think you should be throwing 160 balls at Jarvis Landry either. Yeah. But 130 seems for a slot receiver.
Because I mean, even when they try to take, you know, Devontae Parker, he was in and out of the lineup too. You know,
yeah, and he's also not good. So
well, okay, so what?
Wow. So we've just
burying.
He hasn't been that good. I mean, he has not been as good as they would hope at any.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, you've already just stomped on one of the favorite preseason narrative tropes of the.
Oh, it's going to be
the Devontae Parker breakout is coming.
Exactly.
It's going to be back here too. It's coming for another.
But yeah, no, I would look. I just want him to be a solid contributor to. If he goes to Tennessee, it'd be great to see him as a solid contributor to that offense. But man, I tell you what, it would be interesting though. You know what I mean? With Corey Davis, Jarvis Landry, and then, you know, with Derrick Henry in the backfield, Marcus Mariota as a quarterback, that offensive line still very good. I don't know. It's an intriguing offense to me, anyways. I could put up points.
I think Landry fits every NFL team.
He's
the type 100%. Of player that's going to make your passing game move a little. As long as
I mean, he doesn't fit with certain, like San Francisco would be a terrible fit for him. You know what I mean?
Well, I just mean like if they, it's not saying like that you have anybody there. Like they have a guy in Trent Taylor who can maybe do some of those things.
Yeah, and they need somebody on the outside.
Yeah, no, I agree with you. I'm just saying like for whatever team they can integrate a player like Jarvis Landry because
right.
he's a slot receiver that's reliable. He's going to catch passes.
He's very good at that.
And he's going to bring production to your passing game. And
yeah.
like the longer I look at football, like just produce. Just produce yards, produce catches, because that produces points, which wins football games.
Yeah.
It seems novel, but I think we get lost in the weeds sometimes with everything else. Like, production
sure.
matters. Landry's going to make your pass game more
productive.
There you go. That's what the thing with him is just how much are you going to pay him? Like, he wants to be the highest-paid receiver in the league, and I think that would be a mistake.
It's good to want things.
Right, but if some team does do that, then I think that's a bad move.
Yeah.
I think he fits every team. He's going to make any offense better.
Right.
But just like, my God, are you really going to pay him $16 million a year over the course of 5-6 years or whatever? That seems
I since this is still a fantasy podcast, that's why I'd rather have him go to a team like Chicago or Baltimore,
teams
that have a real need, and that Landry could be a fantasy factor and that production would matter a lot more. Like, the Titans also have Tywan Taylor, who they've been reportedly high on again this offseason.
Yeah, I like Taylor.
A nice guy.
I like Taylor, yeah.
So, like, why add him in there and then just muddle everything up? Like, I'd rather have Landry go to a team where he has a clear need. He can get even his 150, 160 targets, get 1,200 yards, get 8-9 touchdowns, and then everything's just simpler for us.
I think Chicago is the ideal spot because they can pay him.
Do you?
And they have, yeah, they can pay him. They have a need.
He'd be great for Trubisky,
yeah,
too.
Exactly what they need at the position.
Like, talk about a security blanket. Like, oh, I'm in trouble.
That's
There's
not,
Landry.
I know, but that's not his game, though. You know what I'm saying? He's a guy that wants to make that big pass. He's got a big arm.
They need help at every single wide receiver.
They're so bad at wide receiver.
Except that if they spend that money on Jarvis Landry, then do they not target Calvin Ridley perhaps in the first round?
I think that'd be a great one-two combo. They have nothing at the position. I mean,
yeah,
literally nothing. Like the only guy, and like the only guy coming hypothetically that could come back that you can even get kind of optimistic about is Cameron Meredith.
Yep.
And
he's coming off of a
major injury, restricted free agent.
Ugh.
So I don't know. That's a tough one. Other than that, they got nothing going
on. Nothing. NFL Network's Mike Garafolo reporting that the Rams are leaning more towards tagging safety LaMarcus Joyner than Sammy Watkins. The wide receiver franchise tag worth $16 million approximately. The safety tag worth about $11 million. I think financially it makes sense for the Rams. The Rams may be gambling possibly that a receiver in Sammy Watkins, who had just 593 yards last year, won't get $16 million in the open market, which I think is I think that's a pretty good gamble. Although, keep in mind, they did trade a second round draft pick to acquire the services of Sammy Watkins. So certainly they're playing a little bit of chicken here with Sammy Watkins and his representation.
Yeah, I mean, I think people still believe in Sammy Watkins' talent, but I think you're right. Do you give $16 million to a guy who, until this past year, never really stayed healthy in his
career,
you know? And I think that's the fear. Once you get a reputation as being injury prone, then that sticks with you for a while. And so I think that's the big downside.
Although you say that, but I feel like nobody's talking about that. Like, nobody's talking about the injury history of Sammy Watkins simply because he didn't get hurt last year.
Right.
But I agree with you. It's a factor if you're going to pay him money, but it just is another reminder that, like, the only thing people remember is what happened last year.
I don't know. You think that's gotta be a storyline with him.
I don't feel like I hear anybody. I feel like people, people don't talk about how awesome he was before this year,
yeah,
like on a per play, per target basis.
Right.
But
they definitely don't talk about that.
They definitely don't talk about that, and they don't talk about his injury history. They talk about, yeah, he played all 16 games and
had 593 yards or whatever. Right.
So it's like they're only focusing on what just happened recently.
All right.
And I think there's multiple reasons to be concerned about Sammy Watkins.
I'd like to see him come back to L.A.
I wish he would, too, but I think he's going to get paid somewhere else.
Right.
Because he is
– San Francisco.
Because he is good. Maybe San Francisco. I've heard Carolina could be in the market, too, because they're looking to overhaul their whole receiver core. I think he gets paid because
– San Fran would be fun.
There's a lot of teams – There's a lot of teams that just need.
Can you imagine him and Marcus Goodwin just streaking around on the outside
with
and then
Pierre
running around
Pierre and
Trent
back.
Taylor, George
Trent
Kittle,
Taylor inside George.
Also, I think this makes sense just because I don't think we need to burn the Rams either for flipping a two for Sammy because he's a great player, had high upside, and they made the playoffs for the first time in forever last
sure.
year. But they also, I saw you retweeted this too, Harmon, and I've had it open on my computer all morning. Cameron DeSilva had said Sean McVay at the Combine said the Rams are, quote, excited about Josh Reynolds. He's a guy that has all the traits and characteristics, can separate, has a big catch radius. Somebody replied and asked, buy Sammy? Wouldn't be shocked seeing as of right now Sammy may be a top three wide receiver in free agency. Tag and trade. And Cameron said, all things considered, it wouldn't be too surprising to see him go. They are high on Reynolds.
Reynolds is a great, great, great sleeper if Watkins.
Oh, yeah.
Heck yeah.
No doubt. No doubt about it. The NFL reviewing the catch rule, thank God. I think they're going to revise the surviving the ground BS.
It's the stupidest thing.
It's just so dumb.
If it sounds dumb, it is dumb.
It's so dumb. But the league also thinking about changing defensive pass interference to just 15 yards, making it more like the college game.
I'm cool with that.
I'm kind of cool with that, too.
I'm cool with that. The worst thing to me is the guys get tangled and suddenly it's a 50-yard penalty. It flips the field, it changes the game, and you get to the point where offense, especially struggling offenses, just use that as their whole game plan. Let's just throw it up, and let's just pick up 40 yards at a time. So, I'm cool with it. I personally would love to see the officials make the call between, say, an egregious intentional PI and have that be a spot foul thing versus the 15-yarder, but...
I think it takes a little bit of power out of the hands of the officials, too, because if they make a horrible PI call, you know what I'm saying? The offense doesn't
so
just get
much.
Spotted at the one.
Yeah.
You
right.
know what I'm saying? It takes a little power out of the officials' hands, which I'm in favor of. You know, let these guys play. If they make a bad call, it's mitigated significantly. So I think I like that. I like that a lot. And obviously there's going to be – everyone's going to think about anecdotally, oh, well, I remember a play where a guy was wide open in the end zone and he just got tackled. Shouldn't that be at the one? It's like, all right.
No.
Listen, I mean, I get it. I mean, I think overall, I think the impact will be better.
In a league where you arguably have the best football players in the world, like, you still have to earn it. You still have to earn your way down there.
Yeah.
So,
I kind of like the idea, too, of defensive backs trying to make a play and not being quite as worried.
Yeah, absolutely.
About the penalty.
Yeah, yeah. I think anything that takes, lessens the officials' impact on
yes.
the game.
100%.
And also less, anything that takes away them making judgment, any more judgment calls than they already do.
Right.
Is good for the game.
It's 100%
game,
agree.
Period. So, I'm in favor.
All right, so there are your top headlines. Let's go to the phones. All right, he is a two-time Big Ten Defensive Player of the Year from Ohio State, one of the great Rams of all time, a man that did not miss a single game in his 7 seasons as a linebacker for St. Louis. He is currently an analyst for the Big Ten Network. We welcome in James Laurinaitis to the show. James, what's up, man? How you doing?
I'm good. How you doing, man?
I'm doing well, man. So, all right, so you're working for the Big Ten Network now. There's a big name in that conference that is expected to go somewhere in the top 10. That guy's name is Saquon Barkley. Look, we know he's good as a runner, right, and as a pass catcher, but you're a former linebacker, James. What specifically does Saquon do that gives defenders trouble?
Well, gosh, I was lucky enough to watch him play. I went to that game against Ohio State. And I've watched him obviously week in, week out on film. He can hurt you in so many different ways because he's so explosive. Not only did he silence the crowd on the opening kickoff against the Buckeyes, but later on in that game when that touchdown run, his ability to stop and start on a dime, there's certain angles that he takes. There's certain ways that his body bends. I think of the Iowa game, leaping over the D-back and taking a hit and just landing, sticking the landing and keeping going. his lower body strength, I think, is what sets him apart. So as a defender, you're thinking, okay, do I just go low on him, try to chop his legs out, but he's so strong, he might just fly down the pole, as we call it sometimes, when you try to tackle someone with big legs. And athletically, you can't stop your feet on him because he's super fast. He outran Josie Jewell that way. He got him to stop his feet and break to the outside in that football game. And there's one play in particular against Indiana that was a highlight. I don't know if you remember this play, but he caught a simple check down. And T-Gray Scales, who's a linebacker who will get drafted out of Indiana this year, he stopped in a way where his knee was so far over his toes, you thought any other normal athlete would have went to the ground on his knees. He cuts it back and it ends up becoming an explosive touchdown reception on a simple check down. So he's so dynamic. And really, Penn State didn't have a really good offensive line this year. They struggled in short yardage situations. It really makes you wonder what kind of impact Saquon could have had behind a more established offensive line.
You bring it up, man. It's interesting to me. There are certain guys that, you know, maybe did not have a prolific college career, but once they get to the NFL and they play with professional-level offensive linemen and skill position players all around them, they elevate their game. Is Saquon Barkley a guy that, as great as he was in college, can he elevate his game at the next level?
Yeah, I think so, absolutely. If he's a feature guy, if you're going to take a running back early on, he needs to be featured. I can't remember a running back that I've been I think Ezekiel Elliott comes to mind, where every time you watched a game of Ezekiel in college, you expected him to hit a big 60-yard run if it ever broke open. You know, Saquon is the same way, but I think Saquon's even better as far as a receiver out of the backfield. I just think a lot of times, too, with NFL guys, and even guys who are great college guys that don't do well in the NFL, it's all about fit, and it's all about what kind of organization do you go to? Do they believe in you long enough? Do they give you some patience to develop? Do they figure out how to use you to the best of your ability? You know, you hear all the time when it comes to this time of season, the biggest busts or the biggest surprises. You know, a lot of that has to do not with just the player. Some of it does, you know, with obviously their motivation, work ethic once they get a check. But a lot of the times it's what kind of fit do they kind of go, you know, into your system? And does a coach get fired 2 years in, and the next thing you know, they're trying to impress somebody else that doesn't want them, and it kind of can spiral downhill from there. So a lot of these things have to do with what kind of fit and where they end up going as far as the staff and how they're going to be utilized.
Hey, James, you talked about his ability as a receiver, that being Saquon Barkley. Actually, Pat Shurmur today at the Combine, who, of course, is coaching for the Giants now, we're picking in the top two. He said today he has literally no use for a back that doesn't fit in as a receiver. Like, so Saquon Barkley, you mentioned his ability as a receiver. Who does he kind of, in your mind, compare to, like, a current NFL back in terms of what he can do before the ball arrives as a route runner and then even afterwards?
Man, you know, that is a really good question. It really is, because obviously Deion Lewis in New England is a guy who's a phenomenal route runner, a guy who's able to get open and make explosive plays after getting the ball in his hands. But, you know, I really – it's hard to compare certain guys. You know, when you have guys that have earned their stripes in the NFL, I always kind of cringe when I hear, like, well, this receiver here, right? We hear it every year. Well, this receiver, he kind of has the tools of a Jerry Rice back when he was young. And they're like, goodness gracious, what are we doing comparing these guys to guys who've been in the league? You know what I mean? Like, you see it all the time.
Right.
The next good linebacker that comes out is going to be compared to Kuechly, and you're like, come on, man. Kuechly, you know, some of these guys are just outrageous. So it's hard to really pinpoint players, because I don't want to put that pressure on Saquon.
Sure.
I just think, you know, it's unique in the fact that he's not quite Christian McCaffrey as a route runner, but does that mean that he won't be as effective? I don't know. You know, Penn State, a lot of times, the unique thing about him is that he's been able to catch checkdowns and go with it. He catches go routes extremely well and adjusts to the ball, but, you know, is he as dynamic as the Panthers tried to use Christian McCaffrey? I don't know, but I know this. He has the home run ability that McCaffrey does or did coming out of college, and it'll be interesting to see how that will translate.
Can you talk to us about Barkley's teammate, wide receiver Deshaun Hamilton? He reportedly had a pretty good Senior Bowl week. I guess he reads more as a slot guy, 6 foot, 200 pounds, but what makes him so effective?
I mean, you just see him making plays. Each and every week when you watch Penn State, they had guys all over the place, obviously with Barkley. But it seemed like whenever the team would shut down Barkley, Deshaun would come up with a huge play. He had that knack to get open and just make really some unbelievable catches. And not only – I always thought that he was a guy that wasn't brought up enough. There's so much talk about you know, McSorley and Barkley and Gesicki, that I really thought that Deshaun Hamilton was a guy that really stressed out defense. Because if you're a D coordinator going against that team, I mean, what do? You're going to load the box for Saquon.
Right.
But then that makes easy throws on the outside for McSorley, and you're worried about this tight end. So maybe if you go single and double the tight end, well, then now you're manned up on the outside and Deshaun's going to beat you. So it was a really hard offense to slow down. But I thought week in, week out, he was a guy that consistently, you know, again, one of those guys that maybe would have bigger, better stats had he been not around a lot of guys that had so much talent or an offense with so much talent. But I think he's going to be one of those. Like you said, a slot guy in the NFL that's been able to make some plays for a lot of years.
All right, so there's a wide receiver that I'm intrigued by. I don't know much about him. I saw a little bit of game tape on him, but this kid out of Indiana, man, Simi Cobbs Jr., 6'4", 220. You talk about playing some of the best competition, having a great game. 11 receptions, 149 yards versus your Ohio State Buckeyes. What can you tell us about Simi Cobbs Jr.?
Man, I tell you what, that game alone, it seemed like – you talk about a guy who translates in a game. Like, if you have one game film, be like, you know what, that's the National Football League.
Yep.
It was that football game because the ability – I know Richard Lego was the quarterback that game for Indiana. He got replaced as the year went on. But he threw so many back shoulder balls. And I think Timmy had two or three one-handed catches in that game that you were just like, wow. Mm. So the body size, catching the football in really tight windows – beating a guy in Denzel Ward, who's going to be a first-round pick out of Ohio State. But his ability to not only make the – I mean, in college, a lot of guys love to see the stats, right, with the wide receiver. They love to see all those guys lighting it up. But Simi made real-life NFL catches where you're not going to have a ton of separation. You're going to have to kind of out-wrestle some guys, their DBs, and go up and catch these balls. And a lot of these back shoulder type of catches, if I'm him, I'm just – anytime I go into Indy this weekend, if I'm him, I say, hey, listen – I don't care what film you're going to show me. Just show me the – watch the Ohio State game and then – he was making me – I don't have any hair, but he's making me pull it out. I was trying to – I have – that
there you go.
But he was driving me crazy, you know, as a fan. But goodness, how impressive he was, and smart decision for him to leave. And he's a – you know, you talk about the top receivers in the Big Ten, you know, not only the Sydney big body guy, but, you know, there's a kid in Maryland and DJ Moore as well who – was just exciting to watch. But you look at what DJ, he wasn't able to do much against Ohio State. Denzel Ward and those guys really shut him down, which makes Simi Cobbs' big-time game even more impressive.
Well, you mentioned Denzel Ward, and I feel like we'd be remiss to have you on here and not ask you about the Buckeyes. And
right.
This is a guy who was kind of in the shadow of, you know, Marshawn Lattimore, Gerrion Conley, you know, those kind of guys. Talk about what do you think he offers at the next level? Where do you think he could be potentially a great fit?
Yeah, I think, listen, Denzel's a guy who you can put him on an island. You can tell him to go play man coverage. He's one of those DBs, just like the previous guys you mentioned that went through there, that have a very short memory if they get beat. I mean, he got, when you watch the Indiana game, he got beat a couple times by Simi Cobbs, but then there's also some plays where you're like, goodness, you didn't even realize at one point, I think he's one or two in the Big Ten in PBUs for pass breakups. So he's a guy that I feel like Ohio State fans going through the year were like, because of the Lattimores and the Gerrion Conleys and Eli Apple, those guys, they expected, you know, well, this is just EBU now. You know, no one should have any receptions in any game. That's just not, I mean, that's the way it felt like.
Yeah. So,
but I had to try to constantly remind people whenever I get on Big Ten Network, look, this guy is up there and pass breakups, and he's going to get challenged because all Shiano's going to play is man or zero coverage a lot of the time. So, he has a lot of experience with it, which I think fits very well in the National Football League. Like any other college kid going to the National Football League, their biggest adjustment as a DB is going to be the hands, right? You can physically assault a wide receiver all the way down the field in a college game. You have that five-yard rule in the National Football League. So that's going to be an adjustment. But he's a guy that also is willing to tackle. You look at the big hits that he's able to have this year. He's a physical corner. And so I really like what he's going to be able to do for some franchise. And really, I think his best fit is anyone that's going to be playing aggressive man coverage because he played so much at Ohio State.
James Laurinaitis from the Big Ten Network. But let's talk about the NFL now. Obviously, you've got a ton of experience there. You know, the big trade was that Marcus Peters got traded to your former team, the Rams. Do you view him, Marcus Peters, as a zone or a man guy, or does he fit in both schemes? And really, how do you think he's going to fit in with that Wade Phillips defense and what he wants to get done in that 3-4?
Well, here's what I know about Wade and some people talking to people is that they play, he wants his guys to play super fast. You know, I still talk to Alec Ogletree and some guys. They love playing for him, and they know that he's going to adjust whatever he does to his players' talent. And so, look, I love the trade. I think it's great. I mean, it's going to be good for Marcus to have a fresh start and go to a place where he's going to try to prove himself and just say, hey, you know, hopefully a lot of the stuff that got Kansas City to a point to say, hey, we just need to move on. Hopefully a lot of that gets corrected. I think L.A. thinks it will. I think Sean McVay, being a young coach, knows how to relate really well to these players. And he's the guy who's a motivator. And talking to guys who have played for him, they just said that he's one of those coaches that, like, he doesn't have to try hard to earn your respect. He just naturally gets it because he's a coach that is a man of his word. And obviously what he did at a really young age in year one out there was unbelievable. And so I think really the big question is, you know, what happens with Tremaine Johnson? You know, do they try to keep him? Do they let him walk? Does he go somewhere? I'd be shocked if I'm the Cleveland Browns, if I don't try to throw a ton of money at him, having Greg Williams coached him before. But if I'm True, I'm thinking, look, I thought Oakland might be interested in him. True's a Cali boy. He's from out there in Cali. He loves the West Coast. I'm interested to see kind of what, because I know he loves L.A. I'm interested to see kind of what happens with True coming down this offseason.
Man, this is some great insight from a great football player in James Laurinaitis. Now, listen, I know you're a football great, but James, you come from a long line of pro wrestling Laurinaitises. Your father, Joe, a.k.a. the Road Warrior Animal, was one of the greatest pro wrestlers of all time. Hey, listen, other than Animal and Hawk, all right, give me your Mount Rushmore of pro wrestlers.
Oh, man. So, you know, people are going to be surprised. I didn't really grow up, like, even though Pops was wrestling, I was still young when, like, Flair and all those guys started.
Yeah.
You know, the Four Horsemen were around a little bit in WCW, but I tended to watch the most wherever my Pops was at the time. So, for me, like, who I truly loved, I loved HBK. Shawn Michaels is one of them.
Hell yeah.
Talk about, yeah, I love Shawn Michaels. I love Stone Cold, who didn't. The Rock. I would almost love watching The Rock's promos over his over anything else.
Yeah.
But and also I think really as I got older was just the respect for The Undertaker.
Hey,
you could put Hogan in there, but Hogan was his I'll put it this way, his gimmick and his character was so strong, you know, the strongest that probably ever do it. But talk about actual like wrestling in the ring. I did love Hitman Hart. I know I'm going over the Rushmore, but Bret Hart was
exactly
fun. But I really think, like, for me personally, it'd be HBK. Like, I remember my dad bringing me home when I was young. His actual, like, tights, his red ones with the hearts, the initial, like, pure shot HBK. I had the tights, the gloves, everything. but then Stone Cold, The Rock again, and then Taker. I mean, anytime you heard the bell or the Undertaker's music, you're like, here we go. And it's still, I mean, you can go down the ramp on Raw and take them 15 minutes to get to the ring, and I'm still like pumped.
It's true. The pop that these guys got, man, was just unbelievable. But, yeah, no, you're right. I love your Mount Rushmore. This was a debate I had online, actually, yesterday with a few different folks. But James Laurinaitis, man, we appreciate your time. Go check him out on the Big Ten Network. Obviously, the dude comes in prepared. Obviously, the dude knows the game. There is a reason why he is one of the best all-time linebackers of our era. This man is so intelligent in approaching the game. James Laurinaitis, we appreciate the time, man.
Hey, anytime, guys. Thanks for having me.
Thanks, man.
Thank you.
Great, great interview.
Very good.
That was really good. Yeah,
I mean, so prepared, man. So intelligent. It was, I don't know, one of the better interviews, certainly, that I can remember. He was so well prepared. It's unbelievable. I mean, the fact that he's pulling out specific plays from specific games and just has that, you know what I mean, just etched into his memory. That's impressive, man.
Dedicated to his job in the booth, which is good to see.
Yeah, Simi Cobbs is the guy who I have marked on my list to watch
in
the chart, but I haven't gotten to yet, and he made me really excited to check some of those games out.
Me too. The NFL Scouting Combine fires up Friday, March 2nd through Monday, March 5th. I guess technically it's going on now, but you'll see these guys on the field –
starting Friday. You can watch it on NFL Network. We're going to see running backs on Friday. We're going to see quarterbacks and wide receivers on Saturday. Again, that's going to be on NFL Network. Be sure to check it out there. All right, so at the quarterback position, there's going to be a few names, and you've heard them all. Josh Rosen, Sam Darnold, Baker Mayfield, Josh Allen, and Lamar Jackson. Running back, wide receiver, I just throw out a name. Give me somebody that you're curious to see test out, Alex Gilmore.
Oh, you're going to me first. I was also going to say, like, word of caution, like, most of these quarterbacks aren't probably going to throw at the combine.
So actually, a lot of them are.
I thought Darnold, Darnold is not.
Darnold is not. Everybody's the exception. Most
really?
Most of these guys are throwing at the combine.
That was the first one I
which
saw.
Which is actually
and I was like,
surprising.
And yes. I was like, well, most of the other ones will follow suit after I saw the Darnold noise, yeah. So never mind.
I think Rosen says he's excited to throw.
Yeah, I know Mayfield, Allen, Jackson are throwing. I think Mason Rudolph may throw. I think Darnold right now is kind of the one
yeah.
exception.
Yeah.
Which you can take a couple of different ways. Is he not throwing because he's like, yeah, I got a pretty good shot to go number one, or does he just want to do the whole, like, I want it on my own conditions,
yeah,
USC,
yeah.
Look, all that.
At this point, he can control the terms of his job interview.
right. Yeah, as the presumed whatever. Number one overall pick, it probably behooves him to not
throw. It's going to be a top five, no doubt.
But as far as people I'm watching, I want to see, like, how this second to third tier of running backs behind Saquon Barkley performs at the combine. Like, we know he's going to blow it up. He's an athletic freak. He's going to put up massive
metrics. In at 233.
Yeah. I saw somebody posting a video of a workout Barkley did just, I think, at Penn State, and he did more bench press reps at 225 than Clowney did.
Yeah.
Jadeveon Clowney.
Yeah, no, he is crazy.
He's going to destroy everything.
Yeah,
so, but that's why I want to see, like, how does Ronald Jones look? What about Sonny Michel, you know, Chubb, even Bo Scarborough? Does he have any agility, or is he just, you know, a freight train on the tracks? Like, these are some of the guys I want to see, because what's always cool is Zach Whitman, who runs a Three Sigma Athlete, does the Spark scores. And it's always nice to see guys that pop up on the Spark score that actually produce later. It's not obviously like 100% predictive metric, but a couple big it's a piece of the puzzle. A couple big Sparks performers last year who had good fantasy and real-life success were Aaron Jones and Alvin Kamara, because they both were way high on the Spark list. So who are some of these guys we might not be expecting so much? That's the list from last year.
Well,
McCaffrey was way up there.
Even look at Matt Breida.
Breida.
He was up there at the 94.
Chris Carson was up there pretty high.
Yeah, I mean, those are guys that popped up in the preseason and ended up being, like, rumor mills that stuck on the roster and got rolled.
And, like, David Johnson blew up the combine and had a high Spark score in his year, and he was a guy that wasn't, you know, high on the radar. So that's what I'm going to be looking for, is which guys put up these great metrics and have college production that we can then just start to watch this storyline.
A guy that I think fits into that you mentioned earlier, James, is Kalen Ballage out of Arizona State, who, you know, tape-wise and statistically
– big boy.
Didn't blow anybody away, but – everybody you talk to or who talks about him talks about his overall athletic ability. I mean, there's some talk that he could end up being maybe the surprise star of the combine with what he does. It helps that he had a good Senior Bowl week. You know, played well in practice, had a nice game down there in Mobile as well. So
I like him.
You know, he's not getting mentioned a lot amongst the top running backs, but
such
I do want to watch it and see if maybe he sneaks in. And after, you know, once we get into mid-March, if we're not talking about him a little more.
Kalen Ballage obviously needs to find the right schematic fit. You know, I was surprised because Bucky Brooks actually had Sonny Michel ranked higher in terms of a prospect over his teammate Nick Chubb, who was the actual starter there. I was a little bit surprised by that. So
I think some of it has to do with Chubb and the knee injury.
Yeah.
Coming back off of that a little bit.
And Sonny just looked, I mean.
He looked great.
Like an unbelievable
stretch. Especially the playoff for Georgia. Yeah.
So I'm that right there, that dichotomy, that's what I'm looking for, man. I'm really interested to see how Nick Chubb plays out versus Sonny Michel, because, again, I'm surprised by that, because Chubb was so productive in college, and he was the starter ahead of Sonny, but yet, you know, Bucky Brooks, who knows what the hell he's doing, man, has Sonny Michel ranked ahead of Nick Chubb. So that's certainly.
So does Lance Zierlein, for the record. Lance has Sonny with a 5.9 grade. He's his fourth highest rated running back.
Interesting.
And Chubb isn't too much farther down. He's the seventh highest at a 5.6 grade. So
the only reason I like Chubb more is because he just seems more of like an actual running back that has to work in between the tackles and figure out blocking schemes and doing all those things. Michel is just a beast athlete.
Yeah.
And I don't know. I mean, again, I haven't seen him enough to say either way whether or not he's going to be a functional NFL running back. But I tell you, he's a better athlete.
The early chatter I keep hearing about Sonny Michel is Alvin Kamara.
Oof.
Is that teams are looking at him
okay.
to possibly do what or be the kind of role player
Kamara was.
And you're right. And we had talked about this last year, Marcus, you and I, about how we were not really sure. Actually, as a matter of fact, I was not high on him at all because of the fact that he couldn't really crack the starting rotation for Tennessee. But again, we talk about Bucky Brooks.
Right.
I mean, Bucky was so high. I mean, just unbelievably high on Alvin Kamara and was proven right.
Yeah, worth noting, Sony Michel had 9 catches last year.
9. But the year before, he caught a few more passes.
22, 26.
Right.
I feel like they don't just – I don't know. I'm not 100% sure, but I just feel like Georgia didn't really throw into the backfield all that often. But we'll see. I mean, there are – listen, guys. I'm telling you, there's a lot of running backs out there that are super, super interesting. Royce Freeman out of Oregon, who I think is a good player. This kid, Rashad Penny, out of San Diego State.
People like Rashad Penny.
Oh, my goodness. Unbelievably productive
in
college as well.
Watch his tape, you know, because
he's good.
They went back-to-back years with, you know, just stat-busting running backs.
Right.
But you know, Rashad Penny is a different back.
Well, he's a big boy. That's
he's
why.
He's bigger than – Donnell Pumphrey was a tiny little
guy. I was going to say he weighs 2 of them.
So, yeah, there's a lot of running backs out there. In terms of wide receivers, anybody that you're really interested to see test out, Matt Harmon?
I think that one of the top guys that I want to see what they do that I think the combine is going to matter is Cortland Sutton. He's big. We talked about him, I think, a couple podcasts ago. Like, he is a player that has the size, has the ability to win the ball in the air. Yeah, and in a class that right now looks like, just to me, and I'm not the first one to say this, is filled with a lot of, like, number twos, number threes, complimentary guys.
Yeah.
I think teams are going to be intrigued by the players that potentially have a higher ceiling, and I think if Sutton shows by his athletic testing that he might have that higher ceiling, you know, inside of him or whatever, then he's going to get pushed up the board. That he's going to be somebody that teams are more encouraged to take that chance on because, hey, are we going to if we're shooting for number one, and I think a lot of teams right now need a number one receiver, then they're going to be more interested in him if he tests well. So he's somebody I'm watching. And just another note, too, on the quarterbacks.
Yes.
This doesn't really have anything to do with fantasy or whatever, but, like, Lamar Jackson right now doesn't have an agent. And I think his mom is representing him. And I think Marcus called this correct 2 months ago or whatever, like that the Lamar Jackson storyline is going to be really frustrating no matter what side of the aisle you sit on.
Doesn't matter.
And
what you're alluding to is the fact that a lot of folks feel like Lamar Jackson needs to switch positions.
Well, that he needs to switch positions or he can't play quarterback and that there's a lot of like racial coding behind how, and I agree with all of that and how he's discussed totally, and I can guarantee you now because he doesn't have an agent, people are going to come out of the combine with some stuff to say about how he goes through the process or whatever.
Lamar, what are you doing, bro?
So that's a story. I don't know. That's a storyline to me that I want.
On the one side, I get it because rookie contracts are slotted. There's not a whole lot of negotiating that.
But
that
you got to go. I mean, this is the thing. Yeah, it's slotted. But the earlier you go, the higher your draft or the higher your price is on your second contract. That's just the fact of life. Because if a team is drafting you in the first round, they are so motivated to give you a chance. And if they give you a chance, you put up stats. You put up stats, you get a big second contract.
Look at
That's
Blake
how
Bortles.
It works.
Look at Blake Bortles.
So that means he's got 5 years to get an agent.
Right.
You know?
I say we let this process play out, too, because we don't know that he might have met with a bunch of agents, and they wanted to try and manipulate him to fit into the draft system. I mean, and Lamar might have just said, like, I'm going to do me. Like, I'm going to go out. I'm going to play football. I'm going to show everybody that I'm a quarterback. I'm going to deliver on the combine. I'm going to deliver on my pro day. And then teams can draft me where they want, and I'll get an agent.
In reality, all you need this first time around is a lawyer to kind of talk you through the contract and make sure the language doesn't.
Doesn't mean you can't sign one before the draft, too. The draft's like 2 months away.
The only thing that I would say is I think that it would probably help to have a professional around to be like, hey, this is what's going to happen here. This is how the combine's going to go. Then we're going to do your pro day like this.
Yes.
Somebody that knows what the process
to him.
Yeah, what the process is going to be like. Not so much like the contract thing. Yeah, totally. They don't need an agent to slot
listen.
Around.
And not only that, I bring it up because I think of guys like Lee Steinberg, who has made a career from taking relatively unknown guys or unheralded guys and propping them up and building a market for them. He
builds a market for some of these quarterbacks. And quite frankly, if Lamar Jackson doesn't have somebody building that market for him.
Yeah, but he's also
Patrick Mahomes.
He's also not an unknown commodity. Heisman 2 years ago and was a runner-up last year.
Of course, but they're still talking about him in the second round, which is just mind-boggling to me. You know what I mean? Like, so
that's more about the closed-mindedness of NFL GMs and decision makers. The fact that they can't look at a guy like Lamar Jackson and see what all these quarterbacks are flawed. Every single one of them is flawed.
Oh, yeah, no doubt.
And the fact that, for whatever reason, because he doesn't check all the boxes of typical, traditional NFL quarterback, a lot of people aren't clever enough or creative enough to figure out how to use them.
I mean, quite frankly, I look at Lamar Jackson, Baker Mayfield, and Josh Allen, all as either project quarterbacks or guys that have a lot of volatility in their game. I really like Sam Darnold. I really like Josh Rosen. They're classic pocket passers. They've got the size and they've got their requisite arm strength. But those three other guys, Jackson, Mayfield, Allen, I mean, come on. I mean, these guys are definitely high-risk, high-reward guys, but they should be lumped in the same grouping. That's just my thought.
I think Baker is ahead of those two, Allen and Jackson. I think he has.
I think the size and the arm strength.
The size, I get it. But I think he has a good arm, and I think he can make all the throws. I mean, statistically, he was outrageously good.
He's got a hose.
Super accurate.
He's got a hose, man.
Super accurate, good ball placement, all that sort of stuff. So I think he's more closer to that Darnold Rosen tier. But I agree with you. I mean, Allen and Jackson present really similar propositions.
And I don't understand. What is the what's the difference here? Like,
I don't
Josh
know.
Allen might be the number one overall guy, and Lamar Jackson's going to go to the second round.
I think know what the difference is between the two of them.
Fair.
Also, it's not my money. On either side.
Okay.
Yeah. Right.
I'm not paying it. I'm not receiving it.
All right. But on Allen and Jackson, too, like, I'm – both what they run, both of them, is going to be really intriguing. There are rumors that Allen could run a 4.6, which is pretty outrageous. That's like Andrew Luck, even Cam Newton sort of level of athleticism there at his size. And if Lamar Jackson rips off like a Michael Vick type workout, that I think could really boost his stock too. But sometimes I think teams just need to see it.
Yeah, yeah.
Even though, like, you can watch the guy play and you can see he's that level of athlete.
The guy can gun it too, man.
Let's also not forget that, as I mentioned, the draft is 2 months away, which is an eternity.
Oh, sure.
In
oh,
draft
sure.
season.
Oh, sure. No, because, and again, I bring up Lee Steinberg, but remember 2 years ago, Patrick Mahomes. I mean, he was not discussed in the early part of the draft process about being one of those top quarterback guys, but again, he goes to the combine, he starts ripping off these big throws, and people are like, like it. But again, I don't know. Boggles the mind that Lamar Jackson doesn't have an agent right now,
I kind of like it. Let's see. Let's see it play out.
All right.
Because again, just the last point is that Lamar is not one of these guys that needs to do it. He has balled for 2 years. He has the resume. He has the accolades, the hardware in his trophy case.
Yeah.
So, like, he's just going to go do his thing. I respect it.
Can I say this about Lamar Jackson, too? So, 2 years ago, I had fired off a tweet because I was watching Louisville play, and I had openly speculated as well. This was before he was eligible to come out, whether or not he could play quarterback at the professional level, and I was just buried online by people saying, this is racist or whatever it is. And my thought process then, 2 years ago, was that, no, we're talking about a guy that barely pushes 200 pounds. And we're also talking about a guy who, at that time, had a career completion percentage around 50%, which is horrific. But he's gotten better. And so, as I have been given more information, I've changed my opinion as well, which I think a lot of folks get stuck on online, right? Which is just, you said this 2 years ago and now you're backtracking. No, bro, I got more information and things have changed. And that's why you can change your thought process on this as well. And again, I'm much higher on Lamar Jackson today than I was 2 years ago, but I just want to throw that out there for anybody who might try to come at me with and pull up a tweet from 2 years ago saying, I think he should switch positions.
The Twitter detectives will be out.
You know what I'm saying? That's all. That's
the thing
all
is, too, like, I mean, Lamar Jackson, as young men tend to do, also got a little bigger still. Like,
he did.
He got a little taller, got a little thicker.
Yes.
Right now, his size is not that far off of a guy like Aaron Rodgers. Rodgers is like 6'2", 220. Lamar right. Jackson currently, per the interwebs right now, we haven't measured him at the combine, is 6'3", 212.
Yeah, that'll be, I mean, that'll be interesting to see if he measures in.
No, he put in a lot of work in the weight room. There's no doubt about it. He looked physically stronger just this past season. All right, enough of all that. Let's close out with Daily Daps. Let's go.
Daps.
Here we go. MG, my guy, Marcus Grant, what you got?
You know, I'm going to Daily Dap show on Netflix, yes. Dirty Money.
Dirty Money?
Which it's a documentary.
Is that the one
series.
With Shkreli or whatever?
He is. I haven't watched that one yet.
Is he in the like thumbnail, though? I feel like I've seen it.
Might be, yes. So right. I've watched it. I think it's six
Pharma
episodes.
Bro? Yeah.
Pharma Bro. Oh. Six episodes, each right around about an hour. I've watched the first two, and basically each one is about different corporate schemes and scams that have been perpetrated on the public. The first episode was about Volkswagen and, you know, their clean diesel scandal, about how it turned out to not be clean at the at all.
They got fined like $1 billion or something.
A ton
crazy.
For that. Yeah. I just watched last night the one about the payday lending guy who also was like a big-time race car driver on this. Yes, he's the guy who
makes
basically
sense.
He opened up all these payday lending stores and was, you know, yes. predatory lending and taking money from a lot of you know, unsuspecting people who were kind of living on the margins.
Bummer.
But he also was, you know, a big time Ferrari racer and that sort of thing, and kind of living it up on the side. And it's just been really interesting kind of to watch this thing and watch how some of these people operate. But it's six episodes, and like I said, through two episodes, it's been very entertaining so far.
All right, there you go. Alex Gilhart, what do you got?
I've got two daps. First one goes to the movie Annihilation that Natalie Portman stars in, came out this past weekend.
Okay.
I really enjoyed it. Our good friend and colleague Patrick Claibon hated it, which I can understand. It's a it's kind of a unique sci-fi movie. It's gorgeously shot first. It follows all this five woman team, and they're going into this mysterious presence called the Shimmer that they've sent in people to, because it's expanding on the world, and it's based on a book. But people go into it to investigate it, and nobody's ever come out except Natalie Portman's husband. So she's going in to try and solve it, and I think it's really cool. It's really interesting. It's different. It's kind of thought-provoking. The ending, I can easily see why it would make some people mad, because it's not exactly very definitive.
It's one of those.
It leaves it up to interpretation. It's like, and you can read it a couple different ways. And thinking, I've been reading some think pieces on it and stuff.
Okay.
But the point is that I want to Daily Dap it, because like, if you're somebody like me who likes interesting, good, adult, like thought-provoking sci-fi movies, you have to go see them when they're in the theater.
Sure.
You can't just be like, oh, this one, I don't think it's going to be that good. I'm not going to go see it. But like,
I see what
they don't make enough of those, so go. Like, not enough people went to see Blade Runner 2049 last year, which was one of the best movies of the year, which was stupid.
They didn't?
Yeah, it didn't make a massive money at the box office, which I thought it would have. But so go see Annihilation, please. Like, discuss it with your friends. I think it's going to be one of those movies where, you know, 10 years down the line, people will revisit it and be like, damn, this was a pretty good movie. Like, we should talk about this movie again.
Okay.
And then the other dap goes to a show / my friend Chris Visser. He is a assistant editor on the show Unsolved on USA, which is about the Tupac and Biggie murders.
Oh.
And it follows both the timelines of back when the murders happened and when the case was reopened like 10 years ago to try and solve it. Because Biggie's mom leveled a lawsuit against the LAPD or something. And but anyways, he's an assistant editor on that, so we all got together last night, a bunch of us did, and watched the premiere, and it was a pretty interesting show. I mean, the guys they have to play the young Tupac and Biggie are pretty spot on. They look the part, and they sound good.
Yeah, seeing the commercials, they look a lot like them.
They do.
And it's kind of a fun setup,
Tupac
and it's got, what's his name, Jimmy Simpson, who was in Westworld, and
he's known as one of the McPoyles.
House of Cards, one of the McPoyles.
He's one of the McPoyles.
But that dude is awesome. That dude is awesome in everything. Like, he's kind of a chameleon. He can play a real skeezy guy that you don't like. He can kind of play a bit of a hard-ass, but he's good in this. Josh Duhamel's one of the leads. Not in love with him so far, but it also has it's got a great cast. It's got Bokeem Woodbine, who was what's his name? He was from Fargo season 2. He was the black guy. Was it like Moses or something? He had an interesting name in Fargo season 2, but he was awesome in that, and he looks good in here so far too. So, Daily Daps to Chris for getting on a good scripted show. He had been stuck in reality TV for a long time, and I'll probably be intrigued to keep watching Unsolved as well. So,
hey, there you go. All right, Matt Harmon, what do you got?
I think I'm good. So this weekend, my girlfriend converted me to Costco.
I'm sorry, did you just use the G word out loud?
Breaking news!
I've mentioned
it. Here we go.
So I'm a Daily Dap Costco, but it was a...
What do you mean you had... Wait, I'm sorry.
I've never been to a Costco before.
What? Jesus. What?
Why? What?
Never been to a like I'm trying to process this, all this information. It's like what?
It's not really. So it's not really my scene, and this is why I say
it is kind of a thing that a single man does not go to Costco.
Yeah, like what the hell am I talking about?
Although all that, so
oh,
okay.
See, I went
so
to Costco all the damn
time. Let's walk through
for the free samples.
Yes.
Okay.
I mean, let's walk through. Also, remember, we live in L.A., and this is a this was a Sunday. So here's my problem.
Okay.
Who
doesn't like a 36-pack of chocolate chip cookies?
Okay,
come on,
we're getting there. Okay. So I don't like a lot of crowded places, with a lot of people, especially a lot of like annoying people that are annoyed.
Oh my god.
Like, and that is a place like that is just full with a bunch of people that look like they're pissed off to be like, you chose to be here. Anyway, so it's just not really
you're,
like
you're projecting. What are you talking about?
No, I'm not. What
also,
quick
aside, James, getting to the Costco in LA is a nightmare because they not only put a Costco,
that's fair,
which is a very attractive location for a lot of people.
Yeah.
An In-N-Out is in a damn parking lot.
No. There's an In-N-Out and a Starbucks.
Yeah. So it's like it's just a vacuum of people sucking them always into it.
It's a lot. But anyways. So just in general, not really like my scene or whatever. But the reason I was converted was I got a nice 24-pack of Stone beer for like $30. I'm like, all
there
right.
There you go.
So they've got great deals like that. So,
that's what I'm talking about.
Yeah, and I eat the same whole grain bread every morning for breakfast.
Okay.
And I got two packs of that for like $7. That thing costs you like $5 in a good grocery store. So, hey, I'm in. All right? So Daily Daps at Costco. You win, corporations.
What?
I'm in.
Jeez, I love Costco. I've been going to Costco for 20 years.
I gotta get my mind right. Well, Costco.
Yeah,
I love Costco.
It's a mental preparation.
It really is. But you do come away too. Like you're like, man, I feel like I just spent a lot of money today. But at the same time, like. You know, got like five things of toothpaste for like $15. I never need to buy toothpaste for the rest of
your life.
Forever. Five things of toothpaste.
That's what I'm talking
That's
about.
That's incredible.
That's
so
what I'm talking about.
They got like the gallon it. Size of Listerine. I got paper towels. I don't even have a space in my apartment to store all this crap. I'm buying all this stuff in bulk. Give me a break. I like 15 avocados for $6. Come on. Get real.
Right. It's
There's
great.
A lot you. I mean, right. yeah. So look, I'm being, okay, I'm becoming domesticated. I'm growing up. This sucks, but whatever. You win, corporations. Daily daps.
Next week, Harmon's gonna daily dap. Going to bed early, guys. I tried this new thing.
I don't even want to talk about that. I don't want to talk about the going to bed early thing.
Well, do you go to bed early now? Or?
I don't
understand.
Maybe when she's there, I go to bed earlier. I'll just say that. But you know what?
I'm confused.
When I'm there by
James,
when I'm there by myself,
give us your dap and save this whole conversation.
When I'm there by myself, I'm staying up past midnight just for the damn sake of it, because I can. What's up?
But what?
Wow.
This is so bad.
What are you, a child now?
I don't understand.
This is like when I started eating like, you know, cereal, like sugary cereals for dinner in college because my parents weren't around. That's what you sound like.
Yeah, I do.
But why? If your girlfriend's there, why do you guys go to sleep earlier?
James, just move on.
Let's just move on.
What's your dap?
What's your dap, James?
James, what rap artist did you find on YouTube this
Seriously.
Week?
Seriously. Where are we going?
I've got – I don't have very much. I was going to daily dap my I've been going to a boxing gym now. Picked that up during the off season because I've got the time.
Whoa, humble brag.
Is it? I'm going to a gym. That's a humble brag.
He doesn't have a boxing gym. Bro, he doesn't.
Bet you that costs more than my 24-hour fitness membership.
Look, this is how I view it. I've saved up so much money from not going to the gym during the regular
season. Nice.
Now I can that money now can now go over here.
That makes sense.
Right. Exactly.
I see you got a watch too. Let's talk about that.
What's the watch that I always
look
have.
At your. Big watch over here.
You know how I acquired this watch.
Oh, is that that watch? Yeah. I forgot about that one. Yeah. Whatever, it's still a big watch.
Right. It was free, though.
Okay, there you go. Daily daps to my boxing gym, which I went there this morning, as a matter of fact.
Nice.
Forget it, bro. You work out.
Not enough, obviously. Producer, Christina.
Yes.
What do we got?
Well, I'm actually really glad that you liked Annihilation because I'm going to see that tonight after work.
Nice. Let me know what you think.
I will. I'm actually really excited for it.
If you hate it, we can have an in-depth discussion. Claybon and I didn't get an in-depth discussion. I was like, why'd you hate it? And he was like, I wanted it to be a rival. I thought it was going to be a rival, and it wasn't. So, which also was a great movie.
That was a good movie. I see
we
that.
Can talk about it once I see it later.
All right, okay. Good.
All right. Didn't do much this weekend. However, I recently started to love Thai food.
Oh, welcome.
If anybody else likes Thai food,
yes. Big fan.
Did you grow up in L.A. or no?
No, Connecticut.
Okay. Oh, you grew up in Connecticut. Okay.
Yes. So first time out here, tried Thai food a few weeks ago.
What'd you get, Pad Thai?
Yes.
There you go.
Just like, you know, the tradition.
It's good entry dish.
Yeah, exactly. Decided to go a little crazier and went to Night Market over in West Hollywood.
Okay.
Hands down the best food I think I've ever had.
Wow.
So good.
Big endorsement.
I highly recommend.
Have to check it out.
Especially
when did you move here?
Someone who has never had Thai food before. Very good.
There you go.
I moved out here last June.
Okay.
Nice. Okay.
Welcome to LA as well.
Not quite a full year.
Oh, yeah. Coming up on the full year.
There you go.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, man. The world is your oyster. There's so many fun things to do. So many great restaurants to eat at.
As long as you stay on the west side.
Oh, of course. Jeez, of course.
Ah, oh, good.
Perfect.
Good.
Perfect. We got an elitist in our company.
James.
Yes.
Jeez. James, I had to drive to Hollywood last night. It was awful.
Terrible.
The west side bubble.
It's the greatest bubble in the world. Why would you ever want to leave?
Get out of my life.
As Ice Cube once said, the west side is the best side.
Oh, my.
Give me a break, bro. Every time for this podcast, you know, when we don't do it at 10 a.m., running late. running late in traffic. Yeah, I really want to leave the bubble. Give me a break.
You know what? Fair. All right, there you go. For Matt Harmon, for producer Christina, Alex Gelhar, MG My Guy Marcus Grant, I'm James Coe. We'll see you next week.